Hi guys, thanks for tuning in to episode 58 of the Kitchen Stitches podcast. Today is Sunday, June 28th. My name is Summer. You can find me on Ravelry as Summer Yarns, which is S-O-M-E-R-Y-A-R-N-S, and on Instagram with the same username. I am doing something a little unusual tonight and recording way later than I usually do. It's about 10:15. But it's been a busy weekend, and I knew that if I didn't go ahead and record, that it would probably be another week before I actually got a chance to, if that, even. So, I'm fitting it in now. I am in my room. I do have the fan in the background. I hope that the background noise isn't too much, but because it is so late, and my daughter is asleep, and my son's not paying any attention to what I'm doing, but I wanted the background noise. At least, you know, to hopefully block out the noise in the house. So, what are we going to talk about today? Obviously, we're going to talk about some knitting. I have one finished object to talk about, several works in progress, some spinning in the kitchen, what I'm reading, and what I have been up to. I'm going to make a quick note real quick. Well, I don't know. I don't think I need to actually make a note for that. Hopefully y'all can hear me okay. My setup is a little bit different, but we'll make the best of it. I will take a little bit of a listen before I publish just to make sure that everything that you can hear me. So let's talk about some knitting, okay? Finished objects. So yes, I do have one finished object and I'm so pleased with it. I finally finished my clapoteen. I started that for Ravel Linux in 2014. If you have been a long-time listener, you may remember that, and of course I've talked about it since then. But I did this in Blue Heron Rayon Metallic in the Blue Violet colorway, and I think I talked about this a lot last time when I podcast about how there was one hanging in a yarn shop that I used to go to, and I wanted to use this yarn for it. Now that I said this last week, I get really discombobulated for podcasting only every 2 weeks. Because I swear I talked about finishing this, but I think I just talked about it as a work in progress. If I have already talked about this finished object, I apologize. Anyway, I did finish it. I did it. The original pattern has it as it's a wrap, and it's quite a bit deeper, and I ended up doing it as more of a scarf. I guess it would be kind of like a stole, because it's wider than a regular scarf, but it's not as deep as like a wrap would be. I had plenty of yarn left over, so I could have made this a bit longer, but I'm very pleased with it. It's a special project. So I finished that. That's the only finished object I have, but I'm pretty close to a few other things. Don't know when I'll get to them. Works in progress. So let's see. I worked quite a bit on my sock yarn blanket. I didn't write down how many squares I did, but I think I've done... I did between last Saturday and this past Friday, I did at least one square a day. And I think I might have done 3 squares last Sunday. And I think there was another day where I did 2. So I got quite a bit done on that this week. Very pleased with the progress on that. I am starting to wonder if I'm closer to being done with it than I thought I was. If I lay it down, I use the tiles on my floor as a gauge for how big I want it. The tiles are a foot square, so that's a pretty good measure, right? So I want it to be 4 feet by 5 feet when I'm done. And I've got, obviously I've got the bottom, the width I want. So, wait, no, actually, I have it the length I want, and I'm working out to the width. It's actually kind of, it's kind of annoying, actually. When I first joined the squares, I ended up doing too many. So what had originally been intended to be the bottom of it is now the side of it. But I'm still working from that bottom, from that side up, if that makes sense at all. I'm sure that doesn't make any sense. But if you think about it this way, if you're working with the mitered squares, typically the mitered squares, you know, they're the blanket is done with them in diamond shape, and the spine of the miter, I guess is what I would call that, is typically vertical. And the way I have it, I work it with that arrangement. But the actual blanket will be with the spines horizontal, just because of the way it worked out. I'm trying to not let that annoy me. I keep in mind that it's not my blanket, and Laura will never know that that is how it was supposed to be. So I'm okay with it. But as I was saying, I typically lay it down on the tiles to get an idea of how far along I am. And if I just lay it out without stretching it at all, I have gotten about 2.5 feet in, which means I have about another 1.5 feet to go. However, I'm starting to wonder what would happen if I blocked it. Now, this is a good question for any of you who have done this. Since I'm working with sock yarn, that most of the yarn I have, or I've incorporated, has some nylon content. My question is it going to hold its shape, or will it bounce back? If it will hold its shape, I could probably block it out and be pretty close to being finished, and could maybe actually finish this by the end of the summer. I think what I'm going to do is, when I have some help, actually lay it out and stretch it out to see how wide it would be if I were to block it. And of course I know that it will grow a little bit. But I would hate to keep going and then end up, I don't know if I would block it in the first place, but I'm wondering. I don't know. It's something to consider. Anyway, that is one work in progress. Today, I worked on it a little bit last week, or maybe it was the week before. Yeah, I guess it was the week before. And then I've worked on it yesterday, and today is my Hitofude. And this is a paid pattern by Hiroko Fukatsu, if you are not familiar with it. I'm doing this in Miss Babs Katahdin in Ivy's. And I have finished 2 repeats. I'm probably about halfway done with the 3rd repeat. I got quite a bit done on it this weekend. Well, relatively speaking. I'm really enjoying it. It's, once you're familiar with the pattern, it's pretty mindless. So I can do 1 row in about 15 minutes. So it's perfect when I'm trying to get other things done. And I want, you know, what I will do is sit down and work for 15 minutes and then go do something productive. And it's perfect because I can just do a row and then go get something else done. So I'm really liking this. I'm really enjoying the fact that I have actually made some progress on it. I also have worked on my Cerise, which is the 2nd pattern in the Curls book by Hunter Hammerson. I got quite a bit done on the, well, I worked on this quite a bit 2 weeks ago, I guess. Well, yeah, I guess it's been almost 2 weeks. The week after, beginning the day after our last podcast. And it just doesn't seem to be growing very much. I'm sure that I will be very happy with the finished product, but I really am not enjoying knitting this one very much. After all of the pain it caused me when I first started, there's no way I'm ripping it out though. I'm a completist, and I really want to do every curl. So, that is where I stand with that. I couldn't even tell you give you any percentage on that. I would say I'm probably a third of the way done. I'll have to, maybe next time I work on it, I'll weigh my ball and see. But I would say I'm probably a third of the way done with that. Let's see. At work, I had been working on the Clap OT at work. And if you pay attention, you'll know that I typically choose one project to work on at work during lunch and breaks. And I finished the Clap OT, so I brought in another UFO. And that was my Sockhead hat that I started right before Into the Wool last year, just because I wanted something mindless to work on. And I had no intention of finishing it quickly. I just wanted something to work on, and it's languished pretty much since then. I brought that in, and I don't have a full skein for this, and I don't like the super, super slouchy look that this pattern is in the first place. Oh, speaking of, the pattern is, it's a free pattern by Kelly McClure, and I'm doing it in Dancing Dog Dye Works in the Hamburg Philharmonic colorway, which is mostly kind of a bluish gray and black and very dark blue with some pops of navy. It's really pretty, a very masculine colorway. I used this to make mitts for Eli. I guess it was for not this past year's Christmas, but the Christmas before. And I suspect I will give him this hat because it just seems like his kind of hat. Like I said, I don't want to make it as slouchy as I normally do, or no, as the pattern calls for. I think the original pattern has you work until the hat is 14 inches tall. It has a 4-inch brim. It's a free pattern, so I'm not giving anything away. So there's a 4-inch ribbed brim and then 9 inches of stockinette. And I've modified it. I only did 2 inches of ribbing, and then I think I'm going to do work until the entire hat, or before I get to the decreases, I'm going to work until it is 9 inches and then do the decreases. And I've got plenty of yarn from that. I'll actually probably still have some left over even after that. This pattern, if you've done it before, you know. It's just a stockinette hat and fingering weight yarn. It's pretty boring. I would not be making much progress on it at all if I had other options. And that's the beauty of bringing something to work and leaving it there, because I don't have anything else competing for my attention. So I know that I will get work done on this one. So that is the status on that. I think I've got about 2 inches more to do before the decreases, and I can get, if I actually take 2 breaks and bring my lunch and eat in the staff lounge, I can usually get about 5 to 5.5 rows done per day. And I can't remember how many rows make up an inch right now. I think it's 7. I may be wrong about that. So I've probably got maybe 3 or 4 days. Probably I will finish the stockinette portion this week before we have Friday off for 4th of July. And I'll probably get the stockinette portion done, or the straight portion done, before we leave for the long weekend. But I don't think I'll get to the decreases. We'll just have to see. And then the final thing that I have been working on are just a pair of vanilla socks. I'm using Mustache Yarns in the Martian Rainbow colorway. I'm pretty sure I mentioned this, but I don't think I had written it down last time. I think maybe, no? Maybe I didn't. That's weird. I really seem to remember talking about that. But I don't think I had started them the last time I podcast. Anyway, this is I believe it is a 12-stripe rainbow. I can't exactly remember now. I want to think 16-stripe, but I don't, looking at the stripes on it, I really don't think there are 16 stripes. I think it's 10 to 12. Maybe it's 10-stripe. She has several rainbow rainbow colorways that each of them have a different number, and I just don't remember which one this is, but it is absolutely gorgeous. I really love the way these rainbows, they really blend into each other. Like, the color I'm on right now is a green, and the difference between the previous color and the one I'm working on right now were so subtle that until I was in the sunlight, I actually couldn't tell that they were different. And it's just, they just blend into each other so nicely. They're really, really pretty. But yeah, I'm really enjoying those. And I'm probably about halfway done with the foot on the first one. So those are all of my works in progress. Let's talk about some spinning. I've still been working on the Nitty and Color Merino Bamboo in Street Spirit. I finally finished the three bobbins, and I started plying this morning. And I was really, really hoping that I would be able to get it all plied up and measured before I podcast, but I just didn't have time. As much as I wanted to, I just couldn't get it done today. So hopefully tomorrow I'll actually get that finished up, maybe the next day. I'm actually doing a three ply, this is the first three ply I've ever done, and it's working out wonderfully. I cannot wait to see this all skeined up. But I don't think I have enough on the last bobbin that I did. Obviously, I've spun it just a little bit thicker. I mean, looking at the plies when I'm doing it, you really couldn't tell that one of them is thicker than the other, but clearly it is, because either that or I just measured out and didn't have quite the same amount on the last bobbin as I did on the others. But I'm running out of singles on that bobbin faster than I am on the other two. So I probably won't be able to do a three ply for the whole thing, but I think I'll have enough left on the other two bobbins to do a good enough, a significant amount of a two ply. And I think it's thin enough that I can probably just incorporate that into the sock yarn blanket. So I'm really pleased with this. I can't wait to finish it. I have been working on this for so long. I don't even remember when I started it anymore. It's been like 6 weeks or longer. I really can't remember when I started it anymore. But it's been well worth the effort. I've spun it thinner than anything I've ever spun before. The three-ply is working out really nicely. There are some places where all three plies seem to be very close in color, but then there are other places where there's very much a contrast. And it's just so pretty. I can't wait to see it all skeined up. On my spindle, I swear I wrote this down. Give me just a minute. I'm gonna feel stupid if I'm looking at the wrong show notes. No. No. I don't know. I guess I just didn't write it down when I thought I did. Okay, let's see if I can remember. On my spindle, oh, I know why I wrote it. I wrote it on Instagram. That's why I'm remembering doing that. So, what I have on my spindle right now is Woolly Bully on Etsy. It is 100% Shetland top in the Lavender Fields colorway. And it is spinning up so nicely. It's just effortless. And I'm really, really, really liking it. It'll probably one more time of sitting down, I will be finished with the little sample that I have, and then I can ply that up. It's really pretty. I don't remember which colorway I did from that shop, the last fat fiber box I got, but I remember being really happy with that one too. So I'd have to go back and look at that. So based on these two experiences with the fat fiber samples, I would really recommend the Woolly Bully fiber on Etsy. And that is Woollie, I believe. I'll try to remember to link it in Ravelry. And if you are not on Ravelry and you're listening, feel free to leave a comment on the blog, on the show notes, and I will be happy to send you a link. So let's see. That was all my spinning. In the kitchen, I actually don't have a whole lot to talk about. I have not been doing much cooking or baking lately. I don't know what it is. I've just kind of lost my mojo a little bit. And it's not because it's hot. I just haven't really wanted to get into the kitchen. I need to get back in the habit because we seem to be eating out a little bit more than we typically do. We had been really, really bad about eating out multiple times a week. And then we got a lot better and we seem to be sliding again. But I did bake something today. I baked butterscotch streusel banana bread. And yes, it's another recipe from the Sally's Baking Addiction Cookbook. And this turned out okay. It is not my favorite banana bread recipe. I think my favorite is one of the Paula Deen recipes. I don't know if I've ever talked about it on the podcast before, but it also has a streusel topping. And I really like that recipe. That recipe, I believe, has some kind of dried fruit. Maybe cherries? I think. I could be misremembering. I may be mixing up recipes. But what did it have in it? Oh, I don't remember. But I really like that recipe. And this one is okay. Oh, and then the other one that I really like, it's actually in the Ravelry group. If you look at the Share Your Recipes thread, my mom, who is a free spirit, she shared her recipe for banana bread or banana muffins a while, probably a year or so ago. And I really like that recipe too. But this one, it was okay. For some reason, I have a really hard time with streusel. I don't know if it's because my butter is too soft, but I often end up, instead of with like a crumbly topping, it ends up almost more of a paste. I mean, it's like the butter, it is more incorporated than it's supposed to be. It always tastes fine, but it doesn't always look as pretty as what you see in the picture. But this was maybe a little denser than I typically like, and then the topping seemed to have burned just a little bit, even though I covered it with foil like I was supposed to halfway through. Sorry, I got distracted by one of the kids outside. Anyway, even though I covered it up, it seemed to burn just a little bit. So maybe my oven was a little too hot, or maybe I did it just a little bit too long. But as all of the recipes are that I've tried by her, almost all of the recipes I have tried by her. That reminds me, I do have something else to talk about from in the kitchen. But almost all of the recipes I've done by her, I have really liked. But this one is not, it's not necessarily repeatable. The other thing, now that I think about it, was last Sunday, I made another recipe from Sally's Baking Addiction, and I don't remember the exact title of it, but they're breakfast cookies. And they were, if you've ever eaten the Quaker breakfast cookies that are prepackaged, this was a similar recipe. They're very hearty. They have a lot of protein. They're intended to, I don't know if there should be a meal replacement, but definitely a meal supplement. They didn't have very much flour in them, but they had peanut butter and maple syrup and, oh gosh, it's been too long. Raisins, and I used dried peaches, but a recipe called for dried apples, but I couldn't find them at the store. And some kind of nut, but I don't remember what kind now. I don't remember. And they turned out okay. They were kind of dense. As my husband said, they would be really good for trail food. But I don't know that I would make them again to have for breakfast. The reason I made them was for a quick grab-and-go breakfast for last week. And I only ate about half of them, and the kids didn't like them. Actually, I don't know if Eli ever actually had one, but Laura did not like them. And Jimmy was out of town for most of the week, so he didn't get to eat them either. I ended up throwing two or three of them away today because they'd been sitting out too long. Or not out, but they had been... I think it was recommended to keep them for about 5 days. So that recipe, and that's the second one out of her healthy section in the cookbook. They weren't great, but I'll keep trying recipes like that, and maybe I'll come across a winner. So that is all of my in the kitchen. The next thing up from that cookbook, and I'll probably make them next weekend, is donuts. So I actually ordered a donut pan today. I've never made donuts before, so this should be fun. What I'm reading. So the last time I podcast, I was reading The Ostrich Boys by Keith Gray, and I finished that one. That book I would highly recommend, especially if you like young adult and if you like coming-of-age novels. This one, it's been too long since I finished it to really give a good review, but it reminded me somewhat of Stand By Me or Super 8, one of those boy movies, you know, where the boys, like, took off on an adventure, and it kind of reminded me of that. These group of kids in England took off to give their friend a proper funeral, and it was, you know, they, of course, you know, had some realizations along the way and some obstacles, and it was just really good. It actually, it was one of those books that really affected me and affected my mood. I won't say it was a downer of a book overall, but you know, it was a little sad. And the day after I finished it, I just kind of felt a little blue, but I would highly recommend it. So that was The Ostrich Boys by Keith Gray. And then I am currently reading The Invasion of the Tierling by Erica Johansson. And if you remember a couple of months ago, I reviewed The Queen of the Tierling, which is the first in the series. And this is the second book in the series. It came out at the beginning of June. And I am... Oh, hold on. I'm using it as a stand for my iPad. I'm a little less than halfway done with it. So far, it's good. It's not blowing me away like the first one did. I'm not finding myself wanting to read it every, you know, whenever I sit down. I have to struggle. There have actually been a couple of nights where I chose to just go to sleep rather than read. So that doesn't bode well for the book. But I am enjoying it. I had started another one before I picked this one up called The Traitor's Blade by Sebastian de Castell. And that book was one of Goodreads nominees, the People's Choice, or is that what they call them? The Goodreads Choice Awards. It was one that had been nominated, and there was nothing wrong with it, but it just didn't draw me in. It was kind of a swashbuckler kind of book. If you like those kinds of things, you may like it, but it wasn't my cup of tea. So I quit reading that one I've got the ebook on hold for Invasion of the Tierling on Overdrive at the library, but my hold hasn't come through. But I happened to walk past one of our book displays and saw that it was on there. And so I picked up the paper copy, and as soon as my hold comes through, I'll probably return the paper copy and work on or switch to the ebook. Just because it's a little bit of a heavy book, and I prefer these days, I prefer reading an ebook, especially, you know, working on the sockhead hat at work. I can do that and read at the same time, but I can't do that if it's a paper book. So that will be a welcome change when I can switch to the ebook version. And what I've been up to. So I'm going to try to keep this a little short, but I've got a couple of things. So Father's Day, what did we do on Father's Day? Oh, yeah. Okay. So, We got up early and went and had breakfast at a place called Empire Cafe, which is in Montrose area of Houston. We were expecting it to be really busy, and it wasn't. There was a line, I think, when we left, but we were able to get in and order and find a table, no problem. And it was really good. I had an omelet, and Laura had, they called it Italian toast instead of French toast. That looked really good. And I don't remember what the boys had. But food was really good. And then we went to the Houston Museum of Natural Science and saw there was a Chinese exhibit, which we saw, which was really, really good. It was about a lost civilization. It was a discovered civilization in China that they haven't been able to tie to other areas of China. And this exhibit is, I think this is the first time the exhibit has come to the United States. It was really cool, and it was kind of unexpected. We hadn't planned to go, but we are members, so we can get into the special exhibits pretty cheap. So we decided to do that. We also went to the Butterfly Center. We have a big butterfly exhibit where, you know, it's kind of rainforesty with a lot of, you know, butterflies of all types that fly around. It's really pretty and very tranquil. So we did that, and then we went to a planetarium show that was narrated by Tom Hanks about the universe. I mean, obviously it's a planetarium show, but this one was particularly good, and I can't remember what the title, Pathway to the Universe, that's what it was called. And it was one of the better planetarium shows that I had seen. So that was a lot of fun. And then we just came home, and I think we just took it easy the rest of the day. I don't really remember doing anything else specific for Father's Day. We also went and saw Inside Out, which is the new Pixar movie. That's really good if you haven't seen it. I highly recommend it. It is really good for kids who have emotional issues or, you know, hard time dealing with their emotions. I would highly recommend this movie. It's fantastic. It was one of the better Pixar movies that I've seen, I believe. Then this week has actually been a lot of fun. And not, my husband's been gone, and that doesn't have anything to do with why it's been fun, I promise. But Laura, my daughter, has been interning at the archives at the library. It's on the same site where my library is, but it's in our archives, which is the older building across the way. And she has been interning there and has been interested in Houston history. And she asked me at the end of the week or sometime this week if I wanted to go on a history tour with her. So she had checked out this book from the library that had some itineraries, and we did the first one yesterday. So she and I got up early and went we saw some historic sites in Houston. So most of you obviously are not Houstonians who listen to the podcast. And so, you know, you may or may not know anything about Texas history, and honestly, I'm not the person to talk about Texas history because I've actually never taken Texas history. I moved to Texas when I was in ninth grade, but they taught Texas history in, I think, seventh grade, either seventh or eighth grade. So I didn't actually take Texas history. But Houston is actually has a very significant place in Texas history. Harrisburg was the original capital, which was actually just right outside where Houston is now. And the final battle for Texas independence took place not very far from downtown Houston in a place called San Jacinto. And so what we did yesterday was go visit a couple of the key places in that part of Texas history. So the first place we went was It was just a marker outside a city hall in a place called Galena Park, which is just right outside Houston. And it was, actually, wait, let me pull it up. Let's see if I can read it on the picture I took. Because now I can't actually remember what the significance of the marker was. Is that it? Yes. Okay, so it was the Isaac Batterson home, and this is what the marker says. Famed for its part in winning the war for Texas independence, the flooring of this house was, on April 19, 1836, appropriated by General Sam Houston to build rafts to ferry his army across rain-swollen Buffalo Bayou. Although 248 soldiers, most of whom were ill, remained at the Batterson place, Houston's army was victorious in the Battle of San Jacinto 2 days later. This land, originally part of the Ezekiel Thomas estate, was purchased in 1835 by Batterson. The settlement he started, now Galena Park, he named Clinton for his former home in New York. So that was our first stop. And that was actually, all it was the marker. So that was interesting. Then the second one was a place called Vince's Crossing, which was a little, we went and found this granite marker, which was kind of out in the middle of nowhere. We had to basically drive up like we were going to go. This whole area is kind of in the midst of all of the oil refineries, which make up a large part of Houston economy. And it's kind of, this is not the most attractive areas, and it feels a little run down, and there's not a lot of traffic. So we are on this little bitty tiny road looking for this marker. It was definitely an adventure. But we finally found the marker, and this was really cool. If you are familiar with Texas history at all, you'll know that it's cool. And if not, maybe you'll get a sense of it. So in the battle for Texas independence, which I mentioned, the Battle of San Jacinto took place in, I just told you when that was. April of 1836. General Santa Anna was the president of Mexico, and he led Mexican troops into Texas, and the final battle was here, and this particular marker that we ended up on this crazy small road to find was Vince's Crossing. And I don't know if I can actually read this. I can't read the marker very well, but basically Houston has a lot of bayous, which are kind of like rivers. I don't actually know how to explain what a bayou is if you don't know what a bayou is. Well, the Mexican troops were on one side, and the Texans were on the other side. Texians is actually what they were called. Or maybe it was just Santa Anna's troops. I don't know. But there was a bridge across Vince Bayou, and the Texans destroyed the bridge so that they could cross. So what this was a mark that you actually went over a bridge, which was in the same place where Vince's bridge was, and you saw this marker. And Santa Anna was actually captured really, really close to where this marker was. So that was actually really, really cool. That kind of, knowing that you were really, you're really right there where history took place. That's very cool. So that was our second stop, and then the third stop, we actually went to Pasadena, which was it's the town where a lot of the oil refineries are. I'm sure there's more to it than that, but it used to be an agricultural town, and there's a museum there that we were going to go look at, but it was actually closed, so we just kind of walked around that a little bit. And then we went to the San Jacinto Battlefield and Monument, and that was the best part of the trip. It was really cool. So this is on the site where Santa Ana actually surrendered, and they erected a monument in, I think it was early 1900s, I don't remember when it was. It is taller than the Washington Monument, and according to Laura, who read it in the book she had, it is the tallest masonry monument or tower in the world. So that's kind of cool. And they have a really nice museum, and the museum itself is free. They also had a movie, which we decided to go ahead and watch, and it was actually really well done. It wasn't so much a movie. There were a lot of still images that they had put together into a presentation, but it was really good. And then you can also go up to the top of the monument, which the last time we went, I don't remember why we didn't go. Maybe we were afraid. But Laura and I went up to the top. It's 480 feet tall to the platform where we were, and then a little bit the monument itself is even taller than that. But from there, you can see miles in all directions. I did post pictures to Instagram if you want to take a look. And that was just really cool. So we got to see that, and then we walked around a little bit around the grounds, and across the way, they have the USS Texas, which is a World War II battleship, is moored. We didn't go on there this time because it was really hot, and that wasn't really what we wanted to do. It's not actually part of I won't say it's not part of Texas history, but it's not part of this segment of Texas history. And, but on that side, that is actually the site, apparently, where Santa Ana actually surrendered, and I'm pretty sure there's a marker somewhere that shows where it is, but we could not find it. There is a grave, a little cemetery there where Lorenzo de Zavala is buried, and he was the first vice president of the Republic of Texas, so that's kind of cool. And it's just a pretty area. That part was really pretty. And then after we walked around there a little bit, we went to a restaurant that's just, you know, like half a mile away from the monument, called Monument Inn. And it's a really good seafood restaurant. I had fried oysters, and Laura had chicken fried steak, and they have these really good cinnamon rolls that they serve, you know, like you often get dinner rolls. They had dinner rolls and these cinnamon rolls. So we had that. And then we went home. It was quite a day. We had a really good day. And then in the evening, Laura and Eli and I and a couple of family friends went to the Houston Pride Parade, which was, of course, they had record-breaking crowds this year because of the Supreme Court ruling, and that was a lot of fun. It was kind of fun to be part of history, and so we did that. We got really smart. We parked and rode the train in. Houston does not have a great mass transit system, but there is a light rail that runs. They've actually opened 3 lines now, but there's one that's established between, and it goes to downtown, basically. So we parked at one end and rode the train up, and it was fine on the way up. On the way back, when everybody else was leaving, it was actually insane. We were literally squished into the train like sardines. It was a little scary. I mean, everybody was fine, but I mean, we were, at one point, they were trying to squish more people in, and I was up against the pole, and I mean, literally, it was not going anywhere else. It was crazy. And of course, as we went, people kept disembarking. So by the time we got down to where we had parked, it was much, it had emptied out a lot, but it was an adventure, that's for sure. So that is my weekend review. And, I don't think there's anything else to share. Let me see. Nothing else going on. It was a really, really busy weekend. And, I didn't get a whole lot of time to myself, which is surprising. Oh, I know one thing that I'm going to mention, and I don't know if this will happen or not, but my husband and I are actually considering starting a podcast together. And I don't know what that will mean for this one. I think I'll probably keep doing this. Either that or I will turn that one into audio as well. It would be a video podcast. We're just tossing that idea around. But just putting that out there. Anyway, it's 11 o'clock. I'm tired. I have to get up early to go to work. And I've been babbling for 45 minutes. So I'm going to leave you now, and I hope y'all have a great couple of weeks, and I'll talk to you soon.